This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. Christopher Walken started his acting career as a child, but as an adult, he's played many characters you might not want your child to see, characters that are both menacing and oddly funny. There's often something strange and unpredictable about his performances, which is part of the reason he has such a devoted following. After appearing in the films Next Stop Greenwich Village and Annie Hall, Walken won an Academy Award for his portrayal of a self-destructing Vietnam veteran in The Deer Hunter. He's played heavies in James Bond and Batman movies, but he also continues to make independent films, such as his new one, The Opportunists. Walken plays an ex-con who's trying to live the straight life, working as a mechanic. But he gets in debt and doesn't want to accept a loan from his girlfriend, played by Cyndi Lauper. She figures that if he refuses her loan, his only other option will be another heist. So she throws him out of her house.
Well, maybe you ought to stay at your place for a while.
What do you mean?
Well, you got some kind of scheme, don't you?
No.
Yeah, well, there are people who rely on you. And you've been a regular citizen for a while now, and we all got used to you being around.
The regular citizen thing is not going too good.
Get out.
You mean that?
I'm not getting on a bus to go visit you upstate, Vic.
You're gonna be that way?
Yeah.
I'll come back tomorrow. I'll get my stuff. I am out the door.
And leave the keys.
Christopher Walken, welcome to Fresh Air.
Hi.
Although the regular citizen thing isn't working out for you quite in this new movie, and you're about to get involved with another heist, you've really tried to, to hold down a job and be a regular guy and have a clean life. And this is a comparatively regular guy kind of role for you. Tell me what attracted you to this character and why you wanted to accept it.
Well, as you say, he's a man with a house and a family and children and essentially a good person, I think. And it's true, I don't get to play those kind of people very often. I often play various kinds of monsters.
Exactly. Both supernatural and more down-to-earth kinds of monsters.
Yeah.
And how does that suit you? I mean, do you like playing those roles?
Oh, absolutely. And this movie was made in the neighborhood that I grew up in Queens and around Brooklyn. And I knew a lot of the old streets. And parts of the movie were literally shot blocks from where I was born. So that's only happened to me once before. I made a movie called The King of New York, and a lot of it was shot out where I used to live. In both those cases, at the end of the day, I would just go home. And that's nice.
Your wife, Georgianne Walken, is a casting director. She's, for instance, cast The Sopranos. If she were casting you in all your roles, would you be getting as many monster kind of roles?
I don't know. It's funny that it's never come up, but also she's never offered me a job, so maybe that's down the pike someplace.
That's right.
I don't know, maybe she's saving one for me, but she hasn't given me a job yet.
Let me play.
I'll have to speak to her.
Yeah, I think you should. Let me play another scene from one of your movies, and this is King of New York. And this is, I think, more typical of the kind of role that you get where you're the heavy of one sort or another. And in this, you're a drug dealer who's just come out of prison. And to let everyone know you're back, you stop in on some of the competition and tell them that you want a piece of the business.
From here on, nothing goes down unless I'm involved. No blackjack, no dope deals, no nothing. A nickel bag gets sold in the park. I want in. You guys got fat while everybody starved on the street. It's my turn.
You think you're gonna live long enough to spend that money, you f***ing hump?
If any of you tired of getting ripped off by guys like that. You come with me. I'm at the Plaza Hotel. You're welcome. You're all welcome. Enjoy.
Now, in that movie, you play the kind of character who can be pretty sadistic and is like amused by his own sadism, which is the kind of character you've played. And your characters all have this great verbal flair. I guess that's part of good writing for any movie. But I'm wondering where this kind of character starts with you, where your understanding of this kind of character comes from.
I don't know. I think if you get a kind of a ball rolling, and whatever it is, whether you're the funny guy or the romantic guy or the villain or whatever, if you're lucky enough to get that going, you could end up being asked to play that sort of person a lot. I think it's just an economic fact of life in the movies. Then occasionally you get lucky and get something else, something different, kind of like the movie I'm in right now.
The Opportunists.
Or I've gotten to do a few musicals, so I've gotten to do different things, but it's true that I early on started playing, strange or villainous people.
Were there people who you observed as a child who seemed strange and villainous or who seemed particularly unhealthy or morally bankrupt who interested you and you observed?
No, and I can't think of people like that, but somebody suggested to me that it started with Annie Hall. It's one of the first things that I did. It's a great movie, and it's one of the first movies I did, and a lot of people saw it, and it was a wonderful movie. But I played, essentially a suicidal character, a guy who wants to drive his car into traffic. And it's an interesting idea that maybe that's how I got on that oddball foot, you know.
Well, I'm glad you brought up that role. We happen to have a clip standing by. Uh-huh. And this is one of Woody Allen's early movies. He plays a young, aspiring stand-up comic. Diane Keaton plays, and he's like the Jewish neurotic urban guy. Diane Keaton plays the neurotic, goyish Midwesterner. And in this scene, Woody Allen's visiting her family home in the Midwest. At night, he passes you in your bedroom, and you make this confession to him.
Can I confess something? I tell you this because, as an artist, I think you'll understand. Sometimes when I'm driving on the road at night, I see two headlights coming toward me. Fast, I have this sudden impulse to turn the wheel quickly, head on into the oncoming car. I can anticipate the explosion, the sound of shattering glass, the flames rising out of the flowing gasoline.
Right. Well, I have to go now, Dwayne, because I'm due back on the planet Earth.
And of course, in the next scene, it's pouring out and you're driving a very frightened Woody Allen to the airport. It's funny, your lines on that about imagining driving into an oncoming car. I bet a lot of people have imagined that for split seconds in cars.
Poor Dwayne. it's that crazy thing where you anticipate annihilation for a second. It's better not to dwell on that sort of thing.
Now, you've said that you hate guns, but you've been in your share of films in which you have to use a gun or in which a gun is held on you. Is it ever troubling for you to be in a film with a lot of gunplay?
Yeah, again, that seems to be the kind of movies that I do. I'd love to make a movie without guns and be a kind of a Fred McMurray character, with a house and a family and kids and a good job and jokes, a movie with jokes. I've gotten to do some of those. But in fact, as I get older, that seems to be happening. Now, for a long time, I was doing the other thing, but now I seem to be getting parts for people's uncles, you know, and dads and so on. That's a nice turn for me.
My guest is Christopher Walken. His new movie is called The Opportunists. We'll talk more after a break. This is Fresh Air. If you're just joining us, my guest is Christopher Walken, and he's starring in the new film, The Opportunists, which is an independent film. You've said that you grew up on the planet show business. You started in show business as a child. What were you, like three years old or something?
Well, real young. My brothers and I were in the show business at that time. And that was the birth, really, of network television. It all happened in New York City, in and around Rockefeller Center. And they used a lot of kids, particularly at holiday time. I couldn't say that we were actors, but we were there. We were performers. In fact, when I do Saturday Night Live now, I had spent a great deal of time on that floor of NBC, the eighth floor. As a kid, I know all the nooks and crannies there, and I know that area very well. And a lot of those shows came from within five blocks of Rockefeller Center.
You know, I think many of us grew up with the idea that stage mothers are like the mother in Gypsy, where it's like a woman who's really kind of controlling and possessive and manipulative, who really wanted to be in show business herself and couldn't do it, so she's living her show business life through her children. Would your mother have fit that image at all?
Well, I think my mother definitely had a passion for show business, still does. But it wasn't, as I say, such an unusual thing for kids to go to dancing school and then get on the subway and go to New York and be an extra on some TV show. And I remember that the kids in those days, one wanted to be what they called a triple threat. That meant you could sing, you could dance, you could remember your lines. And people who could do that stood a better chance of getting the job than the other guy. And the pay wasn't much, but it was a lot of fun. And there were a lot of people who did that, and it was a sort of a community. I'm very grateful to that. It was an education for me that I couldn't possibly have had anywhere else. And in fact, I don't think I'd be an actor today if I hadn't done that as a kid.
Well, at the same time that you were the show business kid and your mother was taking you through the show business route, your father owned a bakery. Which I believe you and your brothers were expected to work in when you were young. Was that idea of the working world really different from like the show business idea of the working world? I mean, you were in both of those worlds at the same time.
Yeah. But they were only 15 minutes apart on the subway. And I did a lot of different things as a kid. But I think the word work is I heard you say it a few times. That's pretty much what it was, the idea of working, which I still feel is very important. I just try to work as much as I can, and it may be a holdover from those days. My father used to work very hard.
Because you went to children's professional school and spent a lot of your time acting professionally, are there parts of what was considered normal children's lives that mystify you, that you were just like not a part of?
Well, it's true. I don't know much about baseball or football, or, you know, I can't hardly swim. The sports thing wasn't that present where I went to school, but I'm not sure it was for anybody who grew up in Manhattan. There's just no room to play football. The closest thing to baseball I remember was stickball. You used to play it in the street with a rubber ball and a broom handle. So that part of it was a little different. On the other hand, I can dance. There's a whole generation, I think, of people who grew up in the neighborhood that I grew up in, who are probably about my age now, who can tap dance. Going to tap dance class was not unusual, whereas now it probably is.
For any of our listeners interested in seeing you dance, let me recommend the movie Pennies from Heaven, in which you have a part as a pimp who does a really menacing striptease kind of dance on top of a bar. It's a terrific sequence.
And the man who choreographed that number, Danny Daniels, was my tap teacher when I was 12 years old.
Are you kidding?
And so, you know, many, many years later, they asked him if he knew an actor who could tap dance, and he said, yeah, I know the guy.
See, your mother said the lessons would pay off.
That's right.
We manage to get little dance moves sometimes into your movies, like...
I do. I try to fit in a little bit.
Like when you get out of prison in King of New York and you meet up with your boys again, you do, I don't know what the move would be called, but you do a few seconds of a little dance.
Yes. I've been told, yeah, in fact, it's true that there's almost always a little dance I sneak in. I don't do it consciously, but it does end up being there.
Yeah, sometimes it looks like you're about to go into your dance, just into a dance, just when you're standing and about to...
Well, maybe I did, and they cut it. You
know. right. Let me ask you about one of your early movie roles, and this is the role for which you won an Academy Award, and it's The Deer Hunter, in which you play, you know, a young man from an industrial town who goes to Vietnam, taken prisoner, and you're forced to play Russian roulette, to put a pistol to your head that has, you know, a couple of bullets in it, and you don't know when you fire whether one of those bullets is going to go off or whether you'll get an empty cylinder. You know, you're terrified at the beginning of this, you know, when you're forced to put the gun to your head and pull the trigger. That's a really long sequence, that first Russian roulette sequence in the movie. Tell me a little bit about what it was like to shoot it.
Well, when we made that movie, a lot of the physical circumstances were very authentic. And we were in Thailand, and that sequence you're talking about was actually shot in the River Kwai. So there was a reality going on that sometimes isn't always there if you're shooting on a soundstage or whatever. So the bugs and the snakes and everything were there, and it was hot, and I think that helped to make it all convincing.
Did the Russian roulette get to you at all?
I'm very careful about that sort of thing. I'm the guy who checks the gun, you know, over and over, and so.
Let me play another scene. This is a scene from the movie The Comfort of Strangers, which was written and directed by Paul Schrader, who also wrote Taxi Driver. And in this movie, you play an Italian who takes two English tourists under your wing and then uses them in your sadistic sex life. Early on, they can tell there's something not quite right with you, but they're, you know, they're nice people and they don't want to jump to conclusions. So when you invite them to your house, they kind of show up in a state of confusion. The man played by Rupert Everett is with you in the room that used to be your father's study when he was a diplomat, and you start to tell him about your father. In fact, all of your stories in this movie seem to start with the words, "My father." Let's hear this scene.
My father and his father understood themselves clearly. They were men, and they were proud of their sex. Women understood them too. Now, women treat men like children because they can't take them seriously, but men, like my father, my grandfather, women took very seriously. There was no uncertainty, no confusion.
So, this is a museum dedicated to the good old days.
Well, after you punch Rupert Everett in the stomach for no particular reason, then you wink at him. Was that wink in the script, or was that just a little Christopher Walken thing?
That was just one of those winks.
All your big stories in this movie start with my father, and your first my father story is, I think, about 6 or 7 minutes long.
Yes, that was There's an enormous speech. It's a wonderful script written by taken from the Ian McEwan's book, but adapted by Harold Pinter, and the dialogue has a wonderful feeling to it. It's certainly a strange character I was playing, a disturbing sort of fellow.
Yeah, I think you once said that you found this character the most disturbing of all the characters that you've played.
I think that's true. I don't take things home with me that much. But he was I was glad to get rid of him.
What was particularly disturbing about this character?
Well, he was just so twisted.
Christopher Walken will be back in the second half of the show. His new film, The Opportunists, opens August 11th. I'm Terry Gross, and this is Fresh Air.